So, friends, good to be with you today. Glad you're here. Is the second of a 5-day series on what are known as the Indriya, the spiritual faculties, sometimes called the supporting faculties for meditation and life. And as they mature, they're known as the five spiritual powers. So last week, I talked about the first of those, which is confidence or faith. And this week, the subject is energy or effort. And energy or effort is a huge topic. Virya is a huge topic in Buddhist practice. So much so that some teachers consider the entire Buddhist path could be taught through the lens of virya, energy, effort. I'm not going to try to do that today in 14 minutes, but I'm going to offer a different dimension. We covered this topic a little bit a couple of months ago here at Insight Santa Cruz. But this other dimension, I'm going to introduce with a story. So, once upon a time in ancient India, there was a young man, successful musician, successful person, skilled musician, who fell in love with the Buddhist teachings and decided to leave his life and become a monk. And he was, as occasionally creative types can be, very kind of had this obsessive enthusiasm about his creativity. And he brought that enthusiasm, that obsessive quality of mind to the meditation. At least that's the story I tell myself when I read his story. So you can picture him, maybe a bit of a very energetic type, slightly obsessive type. And he gets into robes and it's enlightenment or bust. Going to meditate. And he's practicing assiduously, practicing as hard as he can in this place called Cool Grove. And the story goes that he would practiced walking meditation so long and so vigorously that when he went to sit down again in meditation, he went and he's sitting in this like cross-legged posture, so the soles of his feet are up, tilted towards his eyes, and he notices for the first time that the soles of his feet aren't doing so well. He'd been barefoot, as many people were in ancient India. And the soles of his feet were kind of raw and almost bleeding. And this really discouraged him. His name was Sona. And Sona got discouraged looking down. He's like, "Oh, I'm putting so much energy into this practice, and I'm not getting anywhere. Why don't I just give up, go back to my former life? I was successful, I had a happy life." And those kind of thoughts, discouraged. Well, the Buddha, it just so happened, has an incredible intuition. And he knew that this was a really good time to pay Sona a visit. So he popped in on Sona and said, "How are things going for you?" And elicited Sona, like, "Is it true? Are you feeling discouraged? I get this sense you're discouraged." And Sona just opens up to him. He says, "Yes, I am. I'm feeling very discouraged." And the Buddha, knowing that Sona had been a musician, offered him this teaching. And this was a teaching I gave in brief a couple of months ago. And that is just like if you go to play a stringed instrument and you crank it up, crank the strings up really, really taut, put a lot of effort into cranking them up. You can't play music, the music doesn't flow. So, too, when you offer too much effort, obsessive effort, constricted effort to the practice doesn't flow. And knowing that Sona was about to give up, he also said, "And if you let go completely and let the string just go slack, guess what? The music doesn't flow. And the meditation doesn't flow. Spiritual development doesn't increase. And so, with that little practice discussion, pep talk, the Buddha and Sona parted ways, and Sona continued to practice. And as so often happens in these ancient stories, his practice just lights up. He balances all of the faculties in his mind. The practice deepens, and before too long, he does, in a relaxed, balanced way, reach full awakening. That's a nice end to the story. So, the reason I bring this story in is that balance is incredibly important in the practice of spiritual cultivation, development. And it's a quality that's often talked about. There's other ways of balancing too, besides over-efforting, under-efforting, and finding the sweet spot in the middle. There's a way of attending to the quality of our energy with the same kind of discernment, wisdom. And it can be looking underneath a little bit to what might be causing that striving or that complacency or lassitude or wanting to give up. And instead, noticing maybe that more subtle form of intensity is based in something like anxiety or even fear. Or maybe it's kind of grounded in something that, like, oh, I need to control, I need to lean in, I need to make things happen, be responsible for everything. Both of those kinds of energetic sort of fields can lend themselves to more constriction than flow. And not only that, they can leak out into other parts of our lives, into our relationships. They can impact our health, the way other people perceive us, the effect we have on our room. But instead, to turn the mindfulness back towards the quality of energy, towards the quality of effort that's being put in a situation, can be really illuminating and can start to balance it out, to balance it out. A practitioner I used to work with, they used to feel like they were being plugged into an electrical socket when they sat. And this was a very deep practitioner. I had ordained as a monastic for a while, came back to the West, and their practice was strong when they would sit, and it was like everything just went lit up. It was a powerful place to be. And that person, over some months, maybe even years, discovered that there was this more subtle form of intensity of leaning in that was grounded in a very subtle anxiety. They seemed like a very cooled out person. Very chill. But they discovered this subtle level of me going on. And when that was seen, it was able to relax. And then the energy kind of lit them up from within, like bioluminescence. They could glow with it. And it was much more sustainable, and their practice deepened and opened and broadened. This relaxed receptivity tapped into more vitality in their lives. That over-efforting can also show up as expectation in the practice, or result from expectation in the practice, holding oneself to a high standard. And relaxed persistence, tapping into natural vitality can be really powerful. This starts a kind of process where instead of making one's energy be however you want it to be in a given moment, you can drop in, step back, and allow the energy to match a given situation. And this matching of energy becomes really helpful in times where a lot of energy might not be available. You're sick, as we get older sometimes, or just the natural kind of ebb and flow of energy over time. I learned this from years of dealing with a chronic health condition, chronic pain that I've talked about in this group before, that non-contention, not needing things to be different, actually allowed meeting the quality of energy that was present, whether it was exhaustion or exuberance or something in between. Meeting that allowed for a flow of harmony, a harmonizing that then opened up all this energy that had been bound up in expectation. And that began to flow, and healing began to flow, and it righted itself over time. So, noticing what's skillful or unskillful in any situation, in terms of how we match our energy to it, that can actually not only be ethically helpful and pragmatically helpful in meditation, but in life, in channeling energy wherever it's most helpful for you, into whatever is most helpful for you. This involves boundaries, especially internal boundaries. It's helpful to put some commitment, some firmness to where you want your energy to go, and adaptability. That flowing responsivity. So, energy is a precious life force. And friends, I'm encouraging you today to notice how are you depleting your energy, or what is depleting your energy, and what's feeding it, not just in the moment, but in the long term. Notice what energizes your heart being in healthy ways, and choose those places to put your life energy. In conclusion, a few words from a poem by one of the honorary patron saints of insight meditation, Mary Oliver. Many of you have heard this poem. It's from a summer day, the summer day. She writes, "I don't know exactly what a prayer is. I do know how to pay attention, how to fall down into the grass, how to kneel in the grass, how to be idle and blessed, how to stroll in the fields. This is what I've been doing all day. Tell me, what else should I have done? Doesn't everything die at last and too soon? Tell me, what is it you plan to do with your one wild and precious life?" So, wherever attention goes, energy flows. And that forms the texture of your life. Thank you for your kind attention. And we have a moment or two for announcements.
One of the things we practice here is dana, or donation. And there are so many ways we can express our generosity in sangha. There are more classes lately, if you've noticed, if you look on the calendar or the flyers. And so we're getting new teachers and new classes. So there's always need for help and tech support there. And then there's helping others in the Sangha. I'm sure, I believe in the newsletter, there's ways, you can also find ways to offer generosity. And then there's monetary generosity. We have a great location here, downtown Santa Cruz. It's a great space with around comfortable chairs, great lighting. We like to come here. So we also pay rent. So there's a community basket as well as electronic ways to help offer donation that way. And then our teachers teach freely. They offer, this is a gift. So if you receive benefits, or you do receive benefit from your practice and the teachings that are offered here, there's also a basket for teachers as well as electronic. We appreciate any way you can help with deepening your practice with Donna of generosity. Thank you.
Thank you, Tess. I appreciate it. Tess, just you modeled the pyramid of generosity quite beautifully there. Yeah. And I just also want to name that the Insight Santa Cruz board is an all-volunteer board. And we are excited. I haven't read the text about this, but we are excited that we have a couple of new board members that are in the wings. And one of them, Prasad Acharya, is going through what is called seasoning. And that does not mean we're putting seasoning on him. It means that we are putting forward his name to the community so that anyone who wants to offer their perspective on him or comments or whatnot about him can do so. And if you have questions about it, you feel free to reach out to a board member. Their emails are on the website. And just to say deep bows to all of our board members, current, future, past, for your service. It's an invaluable expression of Dana and Dharma, and it's much appreciated.
And one other thing I forgot to mention,
Yeah.
there are day six monthly now, is that correct?
Yes, almost every month.
And almost every month. And then Dawn is leading a 2 or 3 day in June, and another one probably later in October. I don't know about you, but sometimes my lifestyle doesn't allow me to go on long-term sits. So these days and day-longs as well as 2 or 3 days has been easier for me to carve out time to practice. So I wanted to mention those as
Yeah,
well.
thank you. And what Tess is talking about is something quite beautiful. So this year, Insight Santa Cruz is offering a retreat in June. It's 3 nights, and that is at Jokoji Zen Center, June 20th to 23rd. It's all Dana, offered freely, and the registration's now open. And then there's another retreat that Kim Allen, who teaches here, and I will be offering in August. And then yet another one at Insight Retreat Center with Mary Grace or Bob Stahl and myself at Insight Retreat Center. Registration has not opened for that yet, but it will soon. So lots of opportunities. The first two are shorter, the last one's a full week. And we'd love to see you at any of them if you're free. Thank you all. Be very well.